Tradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Hi, I'm Sarah and you're listening to Cradio. Today I'm joined by Kim Keady, who is founder of Real Talk Australia, a Brisbane-based organisation working to help young people come to appreciate the church's teachings on relationships, sexuality and personal identity. Kim, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
First of all, could you tell us a bit about yourself? I know you're a mum of three kids.
Yes, I am. I have two teenage daughters and I have an 11-year-old son at the moment. I was born and bred in Mackay. I went on the national evangelization teams when I was 18 and 19. And the following year, that's when I, you know, met my husband Patrick and we got married. I studied counselling, so I'm a counsellor. Outside of doing what we do with Real Talk, I counsel mainly teenagers and young adults, and I have been involved in youth ministry since I was 17.
On top of that, you founded Real Talk in 1999,
I believe. Yeah, that's right. When I was pregnant with my second daughter, I went to a talk by a lady. She was like a Catholic presenter that they flew over from America. And I remember being 38 weeks pregnant and sitting and listening to her talk about, it was called God's Plan for Love and Life. And she was talking about young people, and she was talking about sexuality and identity and all this stuff. And I remember listening, and literally I felt like I was going to pop out of my body with excitement, because I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. This is what I feel called to do in this world, is to give this message to as many young people as I could. And I remember going up to her and kind of saying all this, and she just literally, I think she'd been doing all these presentations, so they had a manuscript of all her presentations, and she literally gave me that manuscript and said, go for it. All of it is just basic church teaching. I can't really, you know, copyright any of it, because it's all just me breaking open, you know, what the church teaches. So go for it. Do what you want with it. So I basically mixed what I'd learned in my youth ministry of sharing my personal testimony, of doing some fun activities, of instead of, you know, just doing just the talking, trying to mix some presentations with all of those things. And it just happened out of nowhere. Like, someone in Sydney actually rang me and said, oh, we have a presentation that someone wants on sexuality in Brisbane. Do you want to do it? And I was like, sure. And so I went off and I did that. And then I had some friends who are campus ministers, and they invited me in. And I really just did it word of mouth, because I was obviously balancing motherhood with this as well. So it was really just whoever wanted a presentation, I was doing that at the time.
You mentioned before that you had already been working in youth ministry and you'd been involved in that. Had you always had an understanding of what the church taught on relationships and sexuality, or how did you come to discover that, if not?
I remember my RE teacher actually at school talking about God's plan for love and life, and talking about the life-giving and the love-giving, and that God's plan for sex was about love and life. And it really stood out for me. And I was probably at that point at 13 pretty passionate about it and hoping to, you know, save myself till marriage, and that was the plan. But I got involved in the wrong crowd a year later. And one of the kind of things about that group that I was hanging out with in my teenage years was we liked to go out with people who were older than us, that made us feel older than what we were, that were out of school, that drove a car. And basically when I was 15, I met this guy. I was 15, he was 17. He drove a cool car, and I literally just fell head over heels, you know, in like with him, if you like. Probably look back now and I know it wasn't love, but I felt that at the time. And it started a whole roller coaster of events in my life that Ended up quitting school, ended up being the classic rebellious teenager, living with my boyfriend for a while. And it was really that RE teacher who basically reached out to me during that time, even though I wasn't going to his school anymore, him and his wife ringing me up and saying, do you want to come and sing at a youth mass that we're trying to start? And I basically just looked at my life and realized that this wasn't the life that I wanted to live, and I didn't think that anybody could live, you know. I didn't think it was possible that life could feel so horrible at that time. And through a whole lot of stuff that happened, I got out of that situation and asked my mum and dad if I could move back home. And basically I remember that night in my bed just saying to God, I've tried all this stuff. I've tried life my way. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do whatever you want me to do. So if you could just take my life and do with it whatever you want, I want to live a good life. And then it was shortly after that that I went on one of the NET retreats, and I didn't even know about NET, in Mackay. And again, had that moment of, oh my gosh, I want to get up and tell everyone what God has done for me. And they accepted me. So that I went around in Australia, and I think the passion about the sexuality thing grew, because as I was talking to teenagers around Australia, as I was travelling, they were talking about that stuff, and my heart for that grew, my compassion, my passion to want to speak truth, because some of them didn't even know why God said what he says about sex, if you like. A lot of them kind of think they know what he says, but they definitely don't know why he says what he says. So that's a big thing, even for my ministry and even my motherhood, is, you know, St. Augustine says, to know, what is it? To avoid evil because it's evil is good, but to avoid evil because you know why it's evil is better.
Mm.
And that's kind of a bit of my motto for everything I do.
And no doubt your own testimony is a great help in when you go out and try to talk to young people about this stuff. And you spend a lot of time in high schools talking about these things. And as you mentioned, you're a mother of teenagers. Has the landscape changed since, say, you were in high school to what we're seeing now among teenagers?
It's definitely changed in the sense that it's there's much more pressure, and it's a different world. I mean, there wasn't social media like there is now. When I was a teenager, I often joke and say, thank God social media wasn't around when I was a teenager, because I would have left a big line of embarrassing things online. I'm grateful that I'm not a teenager in this society. I'd be afraid for myself, I think, if I was a teenager and right now. But it is changing. It's changing fast. I often share when I'm in schools that never before has there been a generation that has experienced what this generation is experiencing, as far as the levels of marketing, as far as the exposure to, I call it screen time. So I get them to count up, you know, how many screens, in inverted commas, do you have in your house? Anywhere from an iPad or an iPod or a TV or a computer. And they say the average house has about 15. And we have a bit of a competition as to who has, you know, I've had one kid who had like 45 screens in his house. And that's, you know, the marketers know that, and they're just being slammed with a whole lot of viewpoints, a whole lot of ways of thinking about the world. And it's much more difficult than it was even 5-10 years ago, I think.
It can seem pretty daunting. I know, well, my oldest nephew has just hit high school, and they get given a laptop. He has already had his iPod for a while, and he can access the internet on that. And so I know in my family, well, they have rules about the amount of screen time that you can have, and it's monitored. Yep. But it gets quite unmanageable, doesn't it? Especially when you're looking at the dangers out there, how easy it is to access pornography online. Proliferation of things like sexting, that's a big issue in schools now. So how on earth can parents manage it? What do you advise?
Look, I mean, there's all those books out there on the, you know, cyber safety, and they're really great stuff. There's some really great resources, even agreements that you can get your children to sign. But I think it's hard as parents to try to feel like you can still maintain control in this society when you're not the one giving them their first laptop, or you're not the one giving them their first email address, or you're not the one saying, yes, you can go on the internet now through the school system, basically. They have to be online to do their assignments, to submit their assignments to, they have that computer. And so some parents can feel really disabled, you know. It's like, well, I feel like I've lost control. But it's all about communicating with your children where they're going to have the screen, where they're going to have that computer. Do you let them go into your room, or do you make sure that they're out there and monitoring it? And it is hard work. I mean, I know myself, like, I have to consciously decide to have time in my life to make sure that I'm there beside them, that I'm talking with them, that I'm showing them things that I know. Even there's some great YouTube clips on cyber safety, just making sure they're aware and teaching them. If you go to any cyber safety workshop, they'll say it's not about not letting them online, it's about how to conduct yourself online. And the greatest thing is that our children have an opportunity to think, that no one's forcing them to type in the things that they type in. They actually have an opportunity behind the screen to actually think about their choices and make a good one. And I think it's our responsibility as parents, especially, to try to educate ourselves so that we can feel not like our children are more tech savvy, I guess, than us. Because they are probably tech savvy, but they're not as discerning, and they don't have those good decision-making skills that we can give them as parents.
Also, generally in our culture, something that we're seeing is kids seem to be losing their innocence at an earlier age than ever before. The parents play a central role in educating children about God's plan for love and life, for yep. sexuality. But I know it's something that a lot of parents kind of wish that the school would just take care of, or they just don't know how to approach it or when to approach it. What do you advise?
Look, there is multiple research that parental opinion about sexuality and about sexual decisions has the most important impact on the teenagers' sexual decisions. So there's so much research out there that teenagers who have even just had that one talk, just one talk with their parents, on average, become sexually active later than those who have not had any conversation with their parents. So a lot of parents get really worried about what they're going to say, and that often stops them from even having a conversation. And my encouragement, especially when we're doing our parents' nights, is just have a conversation. Any conversation about this stuff actually helps. There's multiple research. Parents have the strongest effect. It does show that it will delay their sexual activity till later in life, which is beneficial across all factors in life. And that's not even a values thing. That's just a research-based thing. They actually do better in life if that, you know, is delayed. And they do this massive, study on when students were asked who they preferred to be taught by about sex. I think it was over half, about 55%, said their parents, and I think teachers were down at, like, you know, nowhere near that. I think it was the second highest people they want to talk to. So I think that says something.
I'm actually quite surprised by that statistic.
Yeah, yeah. And they feel uncomfortable talking about it with a lot of teachers. And, I mean, the teachers that we talk to, they say the same thing. Like, we don't want to talk about it with them. It's uncomfortable. It's hard to share stories. We have to be with them every day. And that's why they say outside people presented in a really personal way has a good high impact, and then encourages parents them to then go home and talk to their parents. Because as we all know, the church says that it is that sex education is the basic right of the parents. And that's because, and I know this, you know, even with my studies as a counsellor, each child develops at a different level. So there's an 11-year-old, but there's an 11-year-old. Or there's a 13-year-old, and there's a 13-year-old. And we experience that when we come into schools. There's 13-year-olds that need to hear more than what we're saying. And there's some 13-year-olds that we need to adapt because we know they're not ready for what we're saying. And we don't want to be the ones to, you know, tell them what they're not ready to hear. And so that's why in the church, I think, in its amazing wisdom, says, actually, it's the parents that should say, yes, I think you're ready to hear this now. And yes, I'm going to send you to school and I'm going to let you go on this retreat because I know what's happening. I know what they're going to say and we're going to follow it up when we get home. I think that's the best way of teaching your children. And many parents say, oh, when do you talk to them? I don't know when I should talk about it. And I like to use the analogy of walking downstairs, that if it should feel as natural as you walk downstairs. If you skip a few steps, you can have that jolt that goes through your body. It's like, oh, I just missed a few steps. But if you just keep talking about it in the everyday, sexuality is part of who we are as male and female, you know, two-year-old sex education is you're a boy and I'm a girl and wow, this is an amazing world and who are you and how do you express yourself and all of those things. So my thing is talk about it as it comes up in the everyday. You don't have to have that one talk. You could be talking about it as naturally as every day, but it's not just about the act of sex. It's a holistic approach because it's so much part of who we are.
I heard someone say recently, yeah, it's not just, we talk about it as the conversation, but it's not about one conversation. It's about a series of conversations on things like what is love, what is masculinity, things like this that they can learn through their whole life. But when we're dealing with competing voices, we all know what the media's message is.
Yeah.
For example, chastity is something that's totally foreign to our culture. Virginity is seen as something you need to get rid of as quickly as possible. And that seems to filter into the schools. I remember when I was in high school, as young as year 7, there was already this mentality, everybody's doing it.
Mm.
I mean, what are the tools that a parent can give their child to be ready to face that culture?
One of my most favorite things is basically teaching your child from an early age that there's a right time for things. I think as parents, especially in this culture, we are tempted to not allow disappointment or not allow our child to wait. I talk to so many parents about Facebook, for example. There is a time to go on Facebook. There's actually a legal age of 13 to go on Facebook. So many parents say to me, oh, but they're on Facebook because of the games. I'm like, but you lied about their age. They're like 18 on Facebook, or they're only 12, but you put them down as 17 on Facebook. What is that teaching your child? Lie to get what you want now. That's not a good lesson. Even things like sitting in the front seat. I remember when the rules changed here in Queensland that until you're 12, you're not allowed to sit in the front seat anymore, regardless of your weight, regardless of anything. And I remember my daughter being, you know, 10 or 11 and going, all right, back to the back seat you go. And it was tough. And people were like, oh, who cares? It's just down the road. It's like, no, this is practice for things that seemingly don't matter as much. This is practice for waiting for things that do mean a lot, that there is a time, there is a right time to do things and there is a wrong time to do things. And I think that is one of the most natural things you can teach a child in the everyday. I think things about that your body language has, you have a body language. It has its own language all on its own. And what you do with your body says things. What are you saying with your body when you fold your arms and you say, I'm fine? No, you're not fine, but I said I was fine, but your body's saying you're not fine. Or, you know, I remember my son starting, you know, martial arts, taekwondo or whatever, and I said, now, don't forget that when you walk in the room, you have to bow. And when you bow, you're saying, I respect you bow to, or the black belt, for example. And he said, well, why do I have to bow? I said, well, when you bow, you're saying, I respect you for all the hard work that you did to get a black belt and you deserve some honor and respect. And I remember my son saying, But I don't remember ever having to say those words. I'm like, no, you don't have to say those words. You're saying it with your body, so you don't need to say your words. So then we had that opened up a whole discussion about body language, about, okay, well, what does it mean when we kiss someone? What are we saying with our body? And in relationships, when we love someone, our bodies have a language. And so then that can, you know, lead on to talking about sex and what does the body language of sex mean? And talking about that it's not just something that's physical, it is emotional and it's spiritual and it's, you know, and it is physical, but it's saying something. And so giving them that value, I think.
For parents or anyone really who want to find out more, I know Real Talk is doing a variety of great work with parents and schools.
Well, Real Talk, we offer basically mainly high school retreats, full days or 90 minutes. We do run parents' nights as well. Some people invite the parents and the teen, so then we'll do two separate sessions, or sometimes we just have the parents. We have done some staff personal development. That's in the process of kind of growing a bit bigger at the moment. And locally in Brisbane, we're running once a term. We've got something my co-partner is running, Paul. He's running the Dating Wars, which is all about the fight for sexual purity in dating people and in how do we date people anymore, because it's changed, you know, so much. There's heaps of stuff. If you want to check out the website, it's all there at realtalkaustralia.com.
Okay, fabulous. Well, thanks again for your time today, Kim. It's really appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kim Keady from Real Talk Australia. To find out more about her work, visit realtalkaustralia.com. And for more talks, interviews and programs, visit cradio.org.au.
cradio.org.au